You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the Midside, where we don't need to time travel because everyone else is already in 2009. I'm your host, Justin Emblesdeski, and I inadvertently traveled back to 2013 last week with the EPA official story. Thank you to Motive Power on Twitter for pointing out my mistake, and sorry to all of you Midsiders. You deserve better. Speaking of better, and probably the whole reason you listen to this show, joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Well, the show is rarely an ego trip, but I will take it. Thank you. Usually I just feel bad about myself after I finish, but I appreciate the little nod there. I think the reason they listen is because they're ready at any moment to hear us say the thing that is going to get one of us fired from our jobs. I think that's why they listen. It's like watching NASCAR. You don't watch it for the left turns. You watch it for the potential fiery crashes.
Daniel is saying that because if you were here listening live, you would have heard some of our pre-show banter, and that is a reference to one of the stories we're going to discuss. So a little bit of foreshadowing for you there. Also joining us from Dale's lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, back from his cruise, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, I managed to hike a volcano, which we'll get into later. I managed to not get myself burned, which was a full-time job, because I am as blonde and as white and as burnable as, well, just I think maybe the redheads that I were with are the only ones that were more easily burned than me.
I got confused because you were like, hike a volcano and not get burnt. I was like, did you fall in?
Jumping over magma?
No, it was not an active volcano, although that would have been way cooler. Although I'm not going to say that. I mean, I'm going to change my Grindr profile and just put, you know, recently hiked a volcano. So I'm not going to say that it was an active or inactive volcano. I'll leave that to the imagination. But yeah, I had
put
a really...
a picture of an active volcano with an asterisk on the bottom that says may not be the actual volcano I hiked.
See, this is why you're the social media expert, and I'm just the
shaming.
Yeah.
So. Is this the Grindr equivalent of the Tinder tiger photos, where every girl takes a picture next to a tiger and puts it on Tinder?
Wow, I didn't know that was a thing.
Is that a thing?
You can imagine There's not a lot of girls that show up in my Tinder.
It's a very strange thing that I don't understand.
Yeah. Are you supposed to draw conclusions about their performance in bed?
Never thought of that.
Tiger was somehow related to cougar, but I guess not.
No. But yeah, so had a really good vacation, very relaxing. Also very tiring. My muscles are still a little sore, but yeah, it was awesome. Glad to be back.
You missed out on all the farce last week, but now you're back for all the farce this week. So let's get into it. It's time for the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
You know what else just isn't a fad? Patreon. Patreon.com/TheMidside, where you can choose to give us a few bucks every time we produce a piece of content. We sincerely, sincerely appreciate the people who contribute to our Patreon account. It is still, to this day, a bit bewildering to me that we have people who will pay money to hear us speak, but we greatly appreciate it. Patreon.com/TheMidside. This week in farce could have been its own episode of Woke or Joke. Apologies to folks for not putting one of those together. But, you know, #7-month-old, which I will use every month, by the way, as an ongoing excuse. So it's not just the 7-month part. Anyway. But nonetheless, Justin has compiled a slate of news this week that could be its own round because, wow. So the Leaving Neverland documentary came out this week on HBO. And of course, doesn't paint a great picture of Michael Jackson. In fact, once thought to be falsely accused of having inappropriate relations with underage boys, the documentary leaves little to the imagination that he probably is guilty, although we'll never know for sure. Nonetheless, the reactions this week have been swift and decisive. Radio stations have stopped playing Michael Jackson music, and now The Simpsons have pulled their Michael Jackson episode from circulation. Indeed, the 1991 episode called Stark Raving Dad was removed, according to the Wall Street Journal, and Simpsons producer James L. Brooks said, quote, "It feels clearly like the only choice to make." Brooks told the Journal that he, along with Simpsons producer Matt Groening and Al Jean, made the decision after watching the documentary. Brooks said he initially wanted to believe that Jackson was falsely accused, but the documentary, quote, "gave evidence of monstrous behavior." Brooks continued, quote, "I'm against book burning of any kind, but this is our book, and we're allowed to take out a chapter." For those of you who don't remember, the episode features Homer, who gets put in a mental hospital for complications that arise from wearing a pink shirt to work. Yes, so quaint, 1991.
Yeah, imagine that episode in today's day and age. Cancel the Simpsons.
That is not woke, ladies and gentlemen. There he meets a man, Leon Kempowski, who claims to be Michael Jackson, who is actually voiced by Michael Jackson. And Kempowski ultimately moves into the Simpsons house and assists Bart in composing a birthday song for Lisa. How adorable. Justin, this sort of thing continues to raise questions, just as we talked about with Bill Cosby. Like, am I allowed to laugh at a Bill Cosby stand-up? So the question to you is, am I no longer allowed to dance to Thriller?
Well, you're not a zombie, so you were never allowed to dance to Thriller.
Crap. Forgot. That's posthumous appropriation.
Oh, good one. I don't know. This is really, really difficult for me. First of all, I haven't seen Leaving Neverland, so I want to be clear about that. So I don't really have an opinion on the content of that documentary, so I'm just going to sidestep that because last night we were looking at how long the first episode was, because there are two episodes and it was like 122 minutes. And I was like, do I really want to sit through two parts of 122 minutes each talking about a man fucking little boys? So I don't know the content of the documentary. I don't know if I'm ever going to know the content of the documentary. And I don't disagree with the metaphor of this is our book, so we can take a chapter out. Sure, we can do that. But there seems to be a line here. I'm not even sure about taking his music off the air. But his episode of The Simpsons, what are you really accomplishing besides virtue signaling? That's my real question. I can understand maybe on a certain level the music, because you're like, oh, you know, we don't want to, you know, remember this guy. And I know, you know, somebody who saw the documentary expressed to me that he can't even hear the music anymore without thinking about the things he heard in the documentary. So now the cultural association has changed. And maybe it's the same thing with The Simpsons episode, but I don't know. This just seems like evasion to me, Daniel. It seems like evasion because it's like, oh, we're just going to erase that part of it as if it never happened, as if we never made Michael Jackson a huge part of our culture, as if he never had a show in Disneyland. Right now, we're never going to see Captain EO again.
Oh, that's the real travesty here.
I know. Clearly. I love Captain EO. That was a great part of my childhood. But does it feel like evasion to anyone else?
Yeah, William, the way I'll frame this to you is the way of dealing with bad behavior of people, especially, let's call this what it is, if it's true, we'll get to that later, monstrous behavior, is the way to wipe it from history? Is the way to never speak of this person again, never acknowledge them, never acknowledge anything they've ever done, and basically do the monkey thing with the eyes and the ears and the mouth and speak here, see no evil?
Yeah, it sort of smacks of the same thing we do, and this is going to get me fired, the same things we do with the founding fathers, right? I mean, Jefferson was a slave owner, careful. So we immediately should just discount everything he did, right? And now I'm not going to try and get into the intersectional contest of which is worse, owning slaves or raping children. But at least we know Jefferson did own slaves, right? Like, that's not a question, right? We're not sure. We're not trying to sift through the evidence after he's dead, long after he's dead, which I know you want to get into in a second. I also wonder, I've only seen a part of the documentary, much like Justin. It was just too long, and it wasn't something I wanted to think about during my vacation. But I wonder when we think about things that actually happened, and the kinds of people that do them, if it is fair to think of that in the full context, but is it really also fair for someone, like we were talking about the Midsider, who can't listen to the music anymore without associating it with this alleged, these alleged crimes, right? I think Bill Cosby is at least a little different in that he's still alive and, you know, there's a trial and, you know, he was found guilty and, you know, there's more facts here, verifiable facts. But it, when it comes to something like The Simpsons, who they've been around forever. I mean, if you want to talk, you know, talk about big pillars of our culture, of our pop culture, you know, Michael Jackson and The Simpsons are two huge pillars of those cultures. Are we just going to erase things that we don't like? Is it really going to help people learn lessons or appreciate the full context of things to just not have them available anymore? I don't know. I don't think that's the right way to go.
There seems to be a distinction, at least in my mind, and I'll let you react, between further patronizing, meaning further giving of money to someone who has done bad things, like Bill Cosby, or let's say the estate of Michael Jackson. So going out and buying a new Michael Jackson album, or going out and buying a new Bill Cosby box DVD set or something, where they would get royalties for these things. And then consuming something you already have, consuming something that's already been created, that you already have an emotional attachment to, that you have, that was part of your childhood, that was something that was inspirational to you. Say, for instance, his albums that are already on your what do you have, Justin, an iPod still, something like that. What is there a distinction there between new patronizing versus old consumption?
I think there is, although I don't think that's what's being talked about here, because the radio play, some money seems to go somewhere. I don't know, like, if it's like 0.75 cents goes now for the royalties for airplay. And then I don't know what the royalties are for the episode of The Simpsons when it airs. So there's something there about making the money. Yeah. The other question I have is, who does he have an estate and who's the beneficiary? Didn't he have a kid with Lisa Marie?
I think he has children who are alive, at least one.
Fair? I mean, let's look at it that way. Is it fair that they don't get the money that would come in as royalties for his work after he's dead? Are we now punishing the children who are presumably also victims? Not saying he touched his children, but they had to live with a father who's a monster, if these allegations are true, which they seem to be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're entitled to that money, but certainly it's a consideration. But that's sort of what I'm getting at here is what this, I'm trying to draw a distinction between The Simpsons pulling an episode where they're going to have to pay royalties, or the radio's pulling his music where they're going to have to pay royalties, versus how we in the Midside, how individuals should feel, not should feel, you know, the individual's moral complacency, that's what I'll say, in continuing to consume Michael Jackson music.
Yeah, Daniel, I think that transitions a bit, though, into what, how do you judge a situation like that? And I think that's that you have to do that before you can decide what to do.
And well, let's judge the situation then.
Yeah, well, let's judge it. We have a documentary here, quote unquote. I'm putting that in scare quotes, right? This is very much a constructed case, right, against Michael Jackson, who's not here to defend himself. And I think on the on the Reasonable Doubt podcast, Garagos pointed out that they use a quote from him where it sounds like Garagos is saying he's going to bury one of the kids. And that quote is actually from when the FBI seized documents that they were trying to get, that Garagos was trying to get to defend Michael Jackson. And then threatened to like leak them or not release them or something like that. And they were like, there was a video, I guess, of Garagos on a plane with Michael Jackson, and they were having discussions. And that was the thing that got seized. And he was saying, I'm going to bury the FBI if they, you know, if someone violates this attorney-client privilege, right? So, and that's just one example in the documentary of something taken out of context for dramatic effect. Now, that's something you do when you make documentaries, right? That's fine. And I think that when you watch a documentary, any documentary, but especially one like this that's meant to be inflammatory, you have to remember that this is edited in a way and things are put together in a way to make emotional points, right? Because this is to entertain and tell a story. Now, I'm not saying that this is false or true. I'm just saying that you cannot, this is not a court case, right? Like, this is not a, the amount of weight you put behind something like this cannot be the same as if you're reading a court transcript.
And it's not to say, because I haven't seen it, that the evidence isn't compelling that's presented, but that's kind of the point. The documentary genre is made to give you something that's compelling, not necessarily something that is true. Now, it could be that it's both. And depending on the kind of evidence, the amount of evidence, it might be overwhelmingly clear that it is true, but we don't know that. And the context is, just like with a film, a documentary is a selective recreation of reality. You are documenting some portions of reality and not documenting other portions of reality. I think about the documentary Gasland, which I was heavily involved in fighting.
I knew you were going to say that. I was about to reference it 30 seconds ago.
Where Josh Fox, the filmmaker, chose to show people's water being able to be lit on fire out of their tap, and then showing that nearby is hydraulic fracturing, and using a technique that Aristotle would have called an enthymeme, basically removing a premise and allowing the viewer to put in their own premise, i.e. hydraulic fracturing leads to methane in the water, he makes a connection that doesn't really exist, because people were able to light their water on fire going back to the 1700s. But that wasn't ever brought up in the documentary, because he was selectively recreating parts of reality that he wanted to emphasize. And the emphasis is to make a point, which to him is that hydraulic fracturing is bad for the environment, bad for humans, etc. But he's not a journalist. And even worse, sometimes journalists, you know, do this crap too. But, you know, even where he's not a law enforcement officer, he's not, and even they sometimes do bad things. My point is, there's not a strong incentive for him to be really reality focused. There's an incentive for him to recreate reality such to fit the narrative that he wants to push. So, all that being said, it is possible, and maybe with the evidence likely, that Jackson is guilty of these things, but you should not take a documentary at face value necessarily.
Yeah, and let's not drop the context of he was tried and found not guilty for yes. Some of these things, right? Like this is, and that's a huge deal in the sense of, California has unlimited resources and they could not convict him. Right. And it was a very high profile, thing, right? This is different than O.J. Simpson, right? There was no civil case afterwards where guilt was sort of there was no racial component quite like there was with O.J. Simpson. And
well, Michael Jackson also didn't write a book that said, if I had fucked little kids, here's how I would have done it.
Yeah, yeah. So in other words, you can see that I don't want to come off as a Michael Jackson apologist. What I'm trying to show is that as we're judging something like this, and as you're trying to integrate it into, well, what do I do about my love for Michael Jackson music? I would just temper it a bit. And let's see what this looks like, what this evidence looks like in a year or 2 years, right? More people are going to do more research here, clearly, because this has gotten a lot of attention. And there are a lot of people that are still alive today that were alive then. And can confirm or contradict some of the statements of fact in this in this documentary. I mean, just like Garagos did with his quote, right? Like that certainly makes that scene a lot different from what I understand. So
yeah, but William, what you're pointing out is part of this trend, which is what really disturbs me on an extra level, is it's now the documentary as the concretization of the social justice witch hunt. Now, I'm not saying they're not picking targets that may deserve it, if that may have been a double negative, but you get what I'm trying to say. Maybe these targets do deserve it, because so far we've had R. Kelly and we've had Michael Jackson, and those seem to be pretty obvious cases. But how far is this going to go, this new trend, where these people who are still alive or people who were associated with it are still alive, and we put these documentaries just raking them over the coals, and then the public demands actions based upon that, based upon what they've seen? That is a dangerous precedent to set. And it's a way of more literally controlling the culture than I ever thought entertainment would have. Part of why I started this podcast 6 years ago, 7 years ago, was to talk about the way movies and TV affect the culture. Now they're doing it literally.
Well, Justin, I don't want to contradict you, so I'll say yes, and I have a contradictory point. It's not really contradictory. It furthers what you're saying. I think it goes to show that this is a continued trend, actually, and not one that's new in a certain sense. So if you go back to, for instance, Rachel Carson in the book Silent Spring, Rachel Carson was an environmental activist, and I think she was a professor, or at least she was a researcher. And she wrote a book basically saying that DDT runoff, DDT was a pesticide, DDT runoff into the rivers is weakening bird shells and causing birds to not hatch properly and die at a young age. And the whole title Silent Spring essentially meant that eventually there will be no more birds chirping, the springs will be silent. And her book led to essentially a worldwide ban on DDT, which was at that point, and probably still to this day, the most effective pesticide ever invented with the least harm to animals, human beings, etc. It won a Nobel Prize for how incredible it was. And that led to a worldwide... So DDT led to almost an eradication of malaria around the world. And after it was banned, malaria back in full force, killing hundreds of thousands of children every year, by the way, in countries like Africa, where we're just sending nets instead of pesticides. So these things do have consequences. It's not as if you can create this thing, or I don't even think they're trying to create these things in a vacuum. They're creating these things with a narrative in mind, with a purpose in mind, to achieve something. Gasland did that with fracking. And the point is, we have to consume these things critically. We can't just assume because someone wrote a book, or someone created a documentary, or someone made a movie, that thing necessarily means it's the truth, or that even that the authors were going after the truth. I don't think you can assume that. You can't necessarily think that that is the case. You have to be critical consumers of all media. And that's, I think, one of the things that the show tries to highlight consistently.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I don't think what you said contradicts. I mean, I'm not arguing this technique is new. I'm just saying this latest trend is just to go after these particular celebrities in a way that, you know, these are people that have been revered by people. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I have one more sort of talking point around this story, and maybe...
Well, let me close out the judgment thing though, because there's one more point that kind of connects to what Justin said on the judgment thing.
Sure.
Along with this social judgment witch hunt sort of style, there's this what comes along with that is judging others for their judgment, and this is something we see a lot. So in other words, if you still listen to Michael Jackson now, you should feel shame or something. Because you know, even though you may or may not have watched the documentary, right? You're supposed to sort of be a social metaphysician, and since people have decided that it's bad, you should just automatically parrot that it's bad. And I would caution people not to do that, right? You don't know how much people have looked at or researched this particular topic, and to judge them, to take the fact that they like and still listen to Michael Jackson as some sort of moral indictment against their character is not a valid line of reasoning, if that makes sense.
Certainly
to you guys.
Not being objective.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I make fun of people who still think Aaron Hernandez was innocent.
Well, making fun of them and calling them evil are two different things.
Go Google that one, people. So my last point here, and I know we're diving deep into this story, but there's so much, I don't want to say meat to this bone, because it has some horrible connotations.
That's going to get you fired, Jesus.
In the past year, this podcast, I don't want to say has taken on defenses of, but has examined critically the cases against Brett Kavanaugh. Recently, Jesse Smollett, we've come to his defense in a strange way. Robert Kraft, and now, what's his name? Michael Jackson. Justin, is there a through line here, or are we just trying to do the podcast equivalent of clickbait?
Well, what you hit on is where the midside came in to begin with in my life. It's just like, if you have the perspective that you're critical of everything, and you're not critical in the sense that, you know, there are people who are just negative towards everything. And actually, people have a hard time. Now you've set me down a fucking path and it's going to snowball here. But throughout my life, people have always taken me as negative because I'm critical. There's a difference between the two. There's a difference between like just shitting on every point. Like, you've met those people, right? They're point shitters that no matter what you say.
So you're saying you're not Bald Brian. You're not Bald Brian.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the sky is blue. Well, actually, it's turquoise green. Or actually, the colors are quite the same shade of blue. It's like, fuck off. You know the point I'm trying to make. It's not that. It's being critical and wanting to make sure that you're actually in touch with reality. And I think that's all we're doing. But you combine that with a culture that is so far removed from reality that it's hard not to always want to jump to people's defense first. And also, I think in the public sphere, we have forgotten the cognate towards this, which is innocent until proven guilty. And the fact of that is, you need evidence when you're judging someone for anything. And actually, this connects to Batman versus Superman, right? So let's just go right there, okay? Batman versus Superman. There was no evidence that after the Battle of Metropolis, Superman was evil, except collectivism, right? Oh, well, he had powers, Zod had powers, bad things happened, therefore he's evil because he has these powers. Batman, who uses guns, by the way, is saying simply possessing powers makes you evil. I think maybe that was an irony people missed in the movie. Again, this snowballed more than I thought it would, but here we go. We're on this path now. And Batman judges him negatively, even though he has no evidence. And that is fundamentally unjust. That's why the movie is called Dawn of Justice, because he needs to treat Superman as he is in reality. He needs to take the evidence that exists, his actions, his words, and judge them based upon that, not based upon whatever his preconceived notion is. But now we have all these preconceived notions based upon what the media has fed us. So we're critical of it in that sense, because we know the media acts as, I mean, it's right in it, media, mediate. The media has now become the mediator between us and reality. Then you add in social media, which also becomes that social mediator more than simply having social conversations around the water cooler was before. And it leads to the perspective we have.
I think the way I'll focus this, because that's all true, the way I'll focus this, for me at least, is to say that a big theme of the show is being critical of social justice. Well, if you break those terms down, social and justice, the reason we, it's not that we're coming to the defense of the people that I just spoke about, Kavanaugh, Smollett, etc. We're not coming to their defense. What we're doing is saying that the concept of actual justice has certain demands, has certain requirements, has certain thresholds that aren't being met and in fact are being bastardized by the concept of social justice. The idea that if the mob thinks something, it must be true and that person must be punished for what the mob believes. The mob knows nothing. There is no social consciousness. There is no collective hive mind. There is no social understanding. There is only individuals and there is only reality. And justice demands that we judge individuals based on certain facts in certain degrees, because that is what justice requires. That is what being fair, that is what being connected with reality means. So all these things have to go through the proper due processes in order to understand them, in order to act accordingly, because that is a requirement for human flourishing. And if we don't do that, and the further we get away from that, the more there will be mob justice, and the more there will be literal social justice in the sense that they're, you know, posse comitatus, actual mob rule. So,
but what you're saying, Daniel, and don't use the word posse. We learned like season four that that's racist, remember?
Oops, I'll bleep it out.
Thank you.
Remember, based upon what you're saying, there is no such thing as social justice. This idea that, and they use it in the opposite way, they don't want you to take action. They create the term social justice because they want you to believe there's social injustice around. Just because one person believes in racism, the world becomes unjust. That's not how it works. Justice is something that's concretized and reified by the laws of the society. People can treat you however they want. They may be acting unjust, but that does not make the world unjust, and that does not make the society unjust. What makes the society unjust and the world unjust would be the laws and how they're enforced. And there's a different argument if someone argues the death penalty is racist. I'm not saying I agree with that, but that's a different argument than saying, oh, Trump supporters are racist. Those are two completely different arguments.
Yes, absolutely.
And to help tee up a awesome transition, we're not the hipster news service, right? We're not being contrarian to be contrarian. I think when we are bringing the additional context that something like the media or stuff you get on social media, or even sometimes just the media, like the actual art that we're looking at, whether that be a documentary or film or music, television, we're bringing in that extra context that people don't get in other places. And we're adding, you need that extra, it gets back to what you're saying, Justin, that's what justice demands when we judge these things.
Well, right. And we obviously are not hipsters. Like, it's just that what we are and what we like has become the outsiders. Now, that's all it is. I mean, how many times have I complained about that? How can we be hipsters when we support Tom Brady for how great he is and we want him to win more? And like, we don't, do you guys hate Golden State for continuing to win? Do you hate Kevin Durant for going to Golden State? I support all of those things. I don't see how we're hipsters when we do support those kind of things. It's just that it's not our fault that the typical, you know, Bruce Willis type movies have become anti the mainstream now. That's all.
Well, that was a lot of abstraction, so we'll let people pause here and sort through that. In the meantime, we'll give you a little bit of a candy of a story. I'll kind of blow through it because we spent a lot of time on the previous one. Woker joke, gentlemen. Man threatens to sue magazine for using his photo in an article about hipsters all looking alike before realizing the photo isn't him. This is from The Independent, but this story was all over the internet this week and just reeked of farce. Yes, MIT Technology Review published a story about a mathematical study which purports to explain, quote, why anti-conformists always end up looking the same. One reader of the article was furious to recognize himself in the photo used, sporting a beard and beanie hat, in an image illustrating the piece, and quickly fired off an email accusing the publication of slander and breach of copyright. So the magazine investigated and found out they actually licensed the image through Getty Images, which is how one does these things. And it turns out that the subject of the photo was not the same name as the guy who was emailing them. So in other words, the guy who threatened to sue for misusing his image wasn't the one in the photo. He misidentified himself, all of which just proves the story we ran, according to MIT. Hipsters look so much alike that they can't even tell themselves apart from each other. Justin, quick reactions, and then we'll move on to another story.
Well, I mean, this just shows how all of these subcultures, it's all about, it's narcissism when you start ascribing to an identity like this. And it's all about how you're worried. This is where the whole social justice element comes into it, right? You're worried about how you're seen externally rather than dressing and acting in a way that is reflective of what you value, which is an internal thing. And that's completely what this is. When I pick the clothes I want to wear, when I pick the way I want to act and the things I want to talk about, it's based upon what I value And then the people's perception of me is secondary. It's still a concern, especially, you know, when things are like, Daniel doesn't want to get fired for doing this podcast. That's a valid concern, what other people are think about you. But it has to be the secondary. The primary has to be, what do I value? What do I like? What do I think? And how can I express that? And then it's, how can I express that in a healthy way that doesn't end my life?
That's right. William, quick reactions.
There were a gaggle of gays all wearing Vineyard Vines Fail Whale shirts like several days in a row on the cruise. And we had someone, I think me or someone else had posted this story to the channel. All I could think about was they're all dressing alike. It was like, oh man, this points out exactly what I'm talking about when I say that it's hard when people, you know, it's hard to, there's a difference between being gay and identifying as a gay. And that's that this story combined with the Vineyard Vines fail, the logo, if you've never seen the Vineyard Vines shirt, it looks like the Twitter fail whale. In fact, when I first looked at it, I was like, wait, is that the Twitter fail whale? Cause that'd be a cool shirt to wear, the old school Twitter fail whale. But then I realized, I was like, oh no, that's Vineyard Vines. It's like this hipster clothing line. So yeah, it further concretized it for me.
And while I appreciate the alliteration of gaggle of gays, I think the official, as given to us by Adam Carolla, is a parade of gays.
Oh, I stand corrected. I stand corrected.
Yes. And if you also want to be an individual who thinks for himself and dresses how he wants to independently of all other people, you can get your own shirt at themidside.com/store. So.
And as a woman, I can tell you there are some women's sizes available.
There you go.
So let's be clear. Only do it if you value the show and think it's good. Don't do it because you think it's going to...
That's what the joke was.
Okay. Hilarious. Speaking of hilarious women, Elizabeth Warren.
I was going to make a joke, but okay.
It's your show. Would you like to make a joke?
No. Okay. Talk about Elizabeth Warren. She's funnier.
She's hilarious. She has called to break up Facebook, Google, and Amazon. She is part of a growing group of Democrats calling for greater regulation and antitrust enforcement of major tech companies. So Senator Elizabeth Warren, who, if you haven't heard, is running for chief school marm, I mean, president of the United States.
Chief? Friday called... That chief? Really? Isn't that racist? Or is it not racist anymore?
You.
I don't
You're
know.
Welcome. You're welcome. Called for the government to break up Facebook, Google, and Amazon, offering a plan to recategorize the companies and reverse some major tech acquisitions. She is part of this growing trend, as I said. She said, quote, 25 years ago, Facebook, Google, and Amazon didn't exist. Now they're among the most valuable and well-known companies in the world, period. If her statement had stopped there, it'd be very factual and somewhat confusing, but at least she wouldn't look like an ignorant moron. But she continued, quote, it's a great story, but also highlights why the government must break up monopolies and promote competitive markets. Justin, before we get into the rest of the story, has there been a greater non sequitur in the history of logic than that?
No, I can't think of one. Maybe it's I'm 164th Native American, therefore vote for me for president.
Or as Trump tweeted out, 120th. Is that what he said? Anyway. I mean, look, think about that. 25 years ago, Facebook, Google, and Amazon didn't exist. They're the most valuable companies in the world. It's a great story, which highlights why the government must break up monopolies and promote competitive markets. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. If anything, it highlights why the government should stay the F out of the way and allow companies like this to thrive, which started in someone's garage. So, I don't know. Seems crazy to me. Justin, do you think that the government needs to step in and regulate companies like Facebook, Google, and Amazon because they control so much of our lives now? We're so dependent on them. They have so much of our data that someone like an independent arbiter like Elizabeth Warren needs to step in and monkey around in the code.
I have no problem with Amazon. They've made my life infinitely better. When I think about the last 10 years versus before that, like I even think back to grad school and, you know, the effort I had to put into buying things. Whereas, I mean, how about for you today, Daniel? All I did was click on my phone and now you have a microphone with much better audio quality. The audio hasn't even dropped once. And all I had to do was click and Amazon sent that to you. A microphone, an arm for the microphone, a pop protector. And look at that.
Did you use their free 1.5 year shipping service?
Now, here's the problem with that, though. That has to do with where you live. I ordered something immediately after I ordered your microphone and got it the next day using the same shipping.
No, I was talking about the fact that I've been asking for a microphone for half.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. It was Amazon's fault. And you know what? Elizabeth Warren needs to do something because it took Daniel a year and a half to get his microphone. I will vote for you for president, Elizabeth Warren, if you undo the injustice of Daniel getting his microphone in a year and a half. Amazon was discriminating against him because he is half Mexican, and that is not fair.
That's right.
No, I mean, my thoughts here. I think if you look at the history of America, the single greatest legislation that changed this country is the Sherman Antitrust Law. Everything after that is just building upon that. That's the one that started government being involved with business. That's the one that started this idea that it's possible to have a monopoly that just controls everyone. This myth that has taken over people's consciousness that they ever think there'll be one business that controls everything and controls it in a negative way. If you want to talk about the benevolent universe premise versus malevolent universe premise, it all goes back to the Sherman Antitrust Law. So that I'm against this. And I also don't understand why Facebook is lumped in here. Like, I get Google and Amazon, and I'm surprised it hasn't happened sooner. We knew it was going to happen in our lifetime going after these companies. But how is Facebook a monopoly, a trust? How is this an antitrust? I don't understand.
Well, Warren's plan gives a little insight into that. And William, I want to get your reaction to this. In fact, I'm going to set you up as such. Listen to this egregiously stupid plan and tell me what you really think about it. Okay, ready? Warren's plan calls for legislation that would feature a new business category for companies with more than $25 billion of global revenue that also, quote, offer to the public an online marketplace, an exchange, or a platform for connecting third parties. These companies would be called platform utilities and be prevented from owning the platform or any of its participants, as well as be required to meet a standard of fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory dealing with users. They would also not be allowed to share data with other companies. William, WTF.
This would be the end of companies like Apple, Google, Facebook, Twitter, Patreon. It just would be the end. This is what she's attacking, but it would also be the end of other companies like in manufacturing and in other industries, because what she's railing against is integration, right?
Is
vertical integration. This is like business 101, right?
Is Reardon Industries.
yeah. It's right? Crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
She is an Atlas Shrugged villain if there ever was one.
Yeah. Those villains were just not realistic as we watch them in real life do exactly
as
that.
We watch politicians in real life do worse things than what were proposed in Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah.
Increasingly. Yeah. Justin, here's her example of the horrors of what she's talking about. Warren pointed to Amazon's operations of its marketplace and its sale of Amazon Basics, their category of products, as an example of a violation of the proposed legislation. Justin, show me on the doll where Amazon Basics have hurt you.
Well, I'm recording the podcast right now due to Amazon Basics. So, Elizabeth Warren, you have a problem with this podcast? I don't answer that question. I know what the answer is. No, I mean, Amazon Basics are tremendous. And let me ask you this. What is the difference between Amazon Basics and the Great Value brand at Walmart?
There is none, but I think she'd be against that too. I mean, which is ludicrous, right? She's totally off the rails here.
And wait, when did the Great Value brand at Walmart ever stop like Hefty from making trash bags? You can buy a Great Value trash bag or a Hefty trash bag. People still buy Hefty trash bags.
That's right. They're 3 times stronger. I don't know if they are. That is their marketing. But
John Cena.
This is, so for anyone who knows anything about the alcohol industry, what she's essentially proposing for large companies, not for all business, but for large companies, is the company equivalent of what's called the three-tier system, which is in the alcohol industry, there can be manufacturers of alcohol, then there are distributors of alcohol, then there are sellers of alcohol. And you cannot be two...
Wait. Like basements where they keep a lot of alcohol, like Prohibition? That's what you're talking about?
Sellers. Right. Correct. Sellers full of alcohol, i.e. my cellar. No. People who exchange money for beer.
Okay.
Now that we're clear there. Everyone was confused, but now that we're clear. And you cannot be more than one of those things. You can only be either a manufacturer, either a distributor, or either a seller. And this system was set up to promote competition so that there wouldn't be a monopoly among the three. And it's basically trying to solve a public health issue, which is, you know, nonsense. But all it's done is stifle, shock and awe, small businesses who can't actually compete with the regulatory framework. All it has done is create InBev, Budweiser InBev, you know, this massive conglomeration who can deal with this regulatory framework. Now she's proposing this for these big companies, and all it's going to do is destroy them. Because integration, whether it's horizontal or vertical, is the reason these companies can offer such great products that people want, because there's efficiencies here. And those efficiencies allow them to free up capital, allow them to free up time, allow them to create new products that they wouldn't be incentivized to create. She attacks Google's, she says the search component of Google needs to be separated from the ad component of Google. What is Google's incentive to create the search component if they're not going to have the ad component? That is the reason that those two marry with each other on purpose. There is incentive to create one to create the other so that you can make money. It is insane. And not only is it insane, but the word of the year so far is it's wickedly immoral. It is immoral for Senator Warren to try to claim that she gets to put her grubby little fingers, her 1/20th fingers, into these companies and stir around and say, I get to decide what you do. William, go.
I have a question for you, Daniel, so you can rant even further. Mm. Is this her Green New Deal? And what I mean by that is, you know, I think you guys might have talked about it last week, but with the Green New Deal, we saw that kind of pushed the Overton window, right? So now people are talking, oh, well, I guess, you know, cap and trade are not so bad because it's certainly better than this Green New Deal bullshit, right? So now are we going to get, well, you know, what this Elizabeth Warren's proposal is pretty awful, but, you know, maybe if we just regulate Google a little bit more or Facebook a little bit more, maybe that won't be so bad.
I think it is. I think that's exactly the proposal. And the left right now is trying to out-socialist themselves.
Well, what will Beto O'Rourke's equivalent be? Like, what is he going to rail against?
Are we really going to vote for a guy for president whose name is Beta in this time when we're
it's perfect. It's the only male you'll be allowed to vote for if you're a feminist.
Oh, I can't. Like, it's literally, Diddy, we'll talk about Atlas Shrugged villains come to life.
His name,
like,
is Beto. His name is Beto, not Beta, but we call him Beta because obvious reasons. His name is Beto.
Wait, I have something else.
This reminds me of the Adam and Drew show when Dr. Drew thought that Adam's producer was named Maxipata. It's not. His name is Beto. Just to be clear.
No. His name is Beta. No, I have another one that, you know, the whole argument Trump's a secret genius?
Yes. Okay.
I just realized that he is subliminally already getting out of the head of Elizabeth Warren running against him by saying 1/20th.
Yeah.
2020? That's intentional. Come on.
Okay, that's obviously intentional, Justin.
I'm just saying.
All right, let's move off Elizabeth Warren, as everyone should.
I hope you never moved on to Elizabeth Warren. If she's married, divorce her.
Well, she is married. That guy is something else.
How?
Didn't you see the video she did when she announced when she was running for president, where she awkwardly tried to open a beer and then awkwardly tried to drink that beer by shoving the whole bottle in her mouth? And then I love the response when her husband came in the room. She said, "Oh, you're here." And someone retweeted that with, "Elizabeth Warren acted as if her husband doesn't live there." like, her response was essentially like, "Oh my God, what are you doing in this house?" Which is hysterical. I'm not saying anything other than all politicians, left, right, whatever, have no social skills whatsoever and are horrible human beings. That's all I'm saying. It's not just Elizabeth Warren. Speaking of horrible human beings, this is a complex story that I will try to wrangle into a coherency for you. This is a Hollywood Reporter article, and it's titled this, quote, "I need to be careful," end quote. Texts reveal Warner Brothers CEO promoted actress amid apparent sexual relationship. Hundreds of leaked text messages between Kevin Tsujihara, actress Charlotte Kirk, and partners Brett Ratner and James Packer show the powerful executive under pressure said repeatedly he would push for auditions as accusations of extortion and a proposed settlement agreement followed. Warner Media says it will investigate. So essentially, Ratner was going to introduce actress Charlotte Kirk to Warner Brothers chairman and CEO Kevin Tsujihara. He made that setup basically saying, this is the guy who can launch your career. You should really, you know, meet him. And they met at a hotel where it appears that they then had sexual relations and texted back and forth, the actress and Tsujihara, about her getting parts in movies. When she didn't get the parts that she wanted or the quality parts that she wanted, she began to freak out and say she was essentially, she didn't go this far, but it appeared to show that she was going to extort them in some way. And she was also texting back with Ratner saying, like, this was supposed to be my break. Things aren't working out the way I wanted. I feel like I'm being used to close some other mega deal that was going on at the time. And the whole situation, I think, is a demonstration of, yet again, this very strange, sordid world of Hollywood, where this seems to be the norm, and it seems to be the ultimate projection, right, Justin, of these people coming out saying that men are predators and they're attacking people, when it is, in fact, these men, the men who are saying those things, who are actually doing that. But this story's twist, I think, is what Justin wants to talk about, which is that the woman in this case seems to be wanting to use her sexual power in order to gain favors. Justin, do you want to speak further to that point?
Yeah, I don't know how much Brett Ratner and this guy, I don't know how to say his name, who was...
Tsujihara?
What was his role at Warner's?
He's the chairman and CEO.
Yeah, the chairman and CEO of Warner's. I don't know how much they've spoken out against the whole, you know, or in favor of the whole Me Too movement against Harvey Weinstein. I know Ratner was accused of things on his set, I believe. I don't know the depth of those accusations, but it's sort of not a surprise now. This right. woman is doing the stereotype of sleeping her way to the top. And this is the thing, is it takes two to tango. Now, I want to be clear here. I am in no way excusing Harvey Weinstein or anyone who completely uses his powers the way he did. He was doing it against women who were not complicit at all. And that was what made it absolutely horrendously terrible. Now, these men at Warner Brothers are only slightly less terrible in the sense that this woman is complicit with them, but they look more like bumbling buffoons. They've exposed themselves to danger when they shouldn't have. This is the equivalent of victim blaming. And this is what I mean. You know how feminists complain and they say that, oh, well, don't tell a woman not to wear certain types of clothing and not to go certain type of places. She should be able to wear whatever she wants and go whatever she wants and not have the expectation of, you know, getting herself in trouble and, you know, being raped or being attacked or something. This is the same thing here. These men, you have to know not to do this. There are going to be bad women who are trying to use their sexual powers to get ahead when they don't deserve to get ahead, where they know or they have no self-esteem and can't rely on their what they believe they don't have, acting ability. Maybe they don't, maybe they do. Who knows? But these men put themselves in this position. Like, why? This guy's married. Tashihara, Takahashi,
Sugihara.
Takagawa.
Sue? Say it with me, Sue.
What were those little pets they had?
G. Tamagotchi.
Hara. Tamagotchi. Yeah, the Tamagotchi here. He was married.
Wildly racist.
I just figured I'm going to go for the whole gamut here. Why is he putting himself in danger? What is it that's so special about this woman that he needs to sleep with her? And then this raises a whole other question, right? So now we've got a terrible woman trying to take advantage of men, and which makes it feel, makes these men think and feel like they can act in the way that Harvey Weinstein act. So it becomes this whole fucking mess of a culture. And then let me ask you this. Why are these the people who get to decide what movies get made and what movies don't? Maybe this is why. Remember, this is Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Rat Pack Entertainment, right? Brent?
Yes.
What's his name? The Secretary
Renner
of the Treasury?
And, oh, Steve Mnuchin.
Mnuchin, yeah. Now we have the problem that he's associated with this, and he went into business with people. What does it say about him? But besides that, Brett Ratner, Steve Mnuchin, Takagawa, Tamagotchi, whatever his name is. These are the people.
Yamamoto. Godzilla.
Are you saying, like hipsters, they all look the same? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying...
Sue?
Japanese have very small penis.
Sue? G? Hara.
Sugihara. Sugihara was in charge of the DCEU, basically. And now they let... Jeff Johns come in and pervert their brains, and Snyder gets kicked out, and we ended up with the monstrosity of the Justice League Joss Whedon cut. Is it any coincidence that these things happen? How do we get to the point? Is it because the industry is designed in such a way, Daniel, as you were saying, that it lets these people get ahead? Is that the problem, that the industry is so fucked with the way it's composed? And does that mean we have to break the whole thing down and build it up again?
Where's
How
this
does this
woman
happen
when you need her?
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's do the thing where we just take a bulldozer and we go through the streets of Hollywood and we just shuffle everyone out, and then we just bring randomly new people in.
Do we stop at West Hollywood, William?
Or do we go through West Hollywood? We just keep going.
I think movies would get a lot better if it was just random replacement people.
Yeah, I think the important part of this story, and I don't want to spend as much time on this one as we did with Michael Jackson, but the important part of this story is that we see that there's two sides to this, and that this sort of sexual manipulation, in some cases it takes two to tango, and this kind of thing going on in Hollywood is disturbing. And hopefully if there's something that comes out of this Me Too movement, if it's exposing this kind of incestuous relationships, these, you know, sex as a power tool, if we can expose that and sort of disinfect it in the light of day, maybe we can get some better movies out of Hollywood.
Maybe. I will say that my short take on this is, while I agree that there are bad actors or actresses on both sides.
I mean, have you seen Brie Larson? Talk about a bad actress.
Oh, sexist.
Damn it. I'm a woman. I can't be sexist.
Whatsoever. You're sexist. The thing I want to say is, much like Congress and lobbyists, right, where lobbyists often get blamed for trying to take advantage of the powers of Congress, much like lobbyists, if we didn't give this person power, or if they restrained themselves from using this power, it wouldn't be a problem at all. So, of course, there are going to be people seeking favors, men, women, and especially those who would use their sexual prowess, men or women. But if you had some people with some GD integrity running these things, it wouldn't be a problem anyway. If you had, let's pick a paragon of virtue, let's say Justin running the Warner Brothers studios, do you think this would matter? Do you think someone coming up and being like, hey, I'll I want to get ahead in life by, you know what, it wouldn't matter because Justin would go, well, that's great. Where's your CV? Where's your reel?
That's not true. Anyone who would offer him backstage passes to Newfound Glory, he would immediately roll over and give them whatever they wanted.
Well, look, we all have limits. But
well, I could get a backstage pass to Newfound Glory if I really tried. I'm in their exclusive pin collectors club, which has 300 people in it. I'm sure if I talked to them, I could do it. That's not the point. The point is, this is what makes it an extra level of fucked up, what you're saying, Daniel. Honestly, if I were in charge of Warner Brothers, I wouldn't even do any of that. I would just say, talk to Zack Snyder and Christopher Nolan. They had two of the best filmmakers alive in their studio, and they still fucked it up for all this shit. Think about that. You're supposed to be in the business of movie making. Like, imagine if you're in the business of video game making, and you're Nintendo, and you have two of the best video game designers in your company, and you fuck it up because you want to use your power to sleep around. Think about how corrupt that is.
We can only suspect as much from Nintendo's new president, whose name is Bowser.
Yeah, yeah.
Google that, not making it up.
Oh, I thought it was Tamagotchi.
Yoshi? Yoshi Tamagotchi? You know that?
And on that note, let's transition further and just talk more about art in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. Do you wish you were a part of these conversations we've been having in this episode? Well, you can be by joining our Discord channel. You can find the link on any of our episodes if you just go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. Just click on an episode and click on Join Discord. William, is there a... I don't know, because I have the app and I have the client on my computers at this point. Is there just a web client too?
Yeah, there's a web client too. You don't even have to download the app, but certainly
no download necessary.
But downloads available on your Android device, your Apple devices, your Kindle Fire devices, all those devices.
Your Elizabeth Warren government app.
Yeah.
And we do take seriously what you say in Discord. For instance, Midsider Frank pointed out that last week I triggered the three tackle rule. And then I must say, which of the three movies I would watch. In fact, Daniel and I had realized this, but I had hoped no one would notice. But you Midsiders, we created this culture and we said, interact with us, and you do. So join the Discord, and like Frank, you can get the answer to the question of, would I see Little, The Public, or whatever that Don Quixote movie was. What was that called?
Finding Don Quixote or something. I don't know.
Yeah, something.
Kylo Ren finds Don Quixote.
Yeah, where Don Quixote gets lost and then you have to wander through the wilderness with Ellen DeGeneres to find him.
That's right.
I would actually watch that movie, by the way.
I would watch Kylo Ren fight Don Quixote, actually.
Of the three, I would see The Public, just because I appreciate the fact that Emilio Estevez is writing and directing a movie, and I would want to give him a chance and see what he would be able to come up with his opportunity to be a true artiste. And hopefully he's not using the casting couch to sleep with women. All right, for this week's review, I want to talk about the movie Greta. I saw this last weekend, last Sunday night. This
the
is
biopic
the
biopic of Greta Van Susteren.
Would have been more entertaining than this movie. So this movie stars the girl who played Hit Girl. I don't remember her name. Some old woman who gives a really great performance. In the movie, Hit Girl's character has lost her mother recently. And she's living in New York City with her friend. And she finds a pocketbook that was left on the subway. She opens it up and it has an address in it. And she goes to the address and this woman becomes obsessed with her. And this becomes like a drama, horror, thriller type movie. So this movie suffers from being cliche, but it also suffers from the guy who wrote and directed it just being an awful, terrible writer. The first thing he does is he has the character say and do things based upon what he has in his head, not what he actually shows. So the roommate is shown as like being into yoga and dressing a little skimpily. And then at a certain point, the roommate says to the Hit Girl's character, I know you think I'm like all shallow and stupid and everything. And it's like, it's never been established that Hit Girl thinks that of her. And it's never been established she is that way. Just because someone likes yoga and dresses skimpily and is blonde doesn't mean she's like shallow and stupid. So it's like, what does that reveal about what the writer thinks about the world? And then this is the point where they lost me, Daniel. So in this conversation, she's telling her how New York City is different. And if you talk to the crazies, they'll follow you home. And that if you engage with these people, it will put your life in danger. And then she says to her, she's like, I know it's different. I know you're from Boston. And I was like, what? Like, you made it sound like she's from like a small Midwest town, like Thawville or something. Like Boston? Like, that's insane, isn't it?
Thawville, deep pull. yeah, that seems to be a comparison.
It was very strange. Then through the rest of the movie, I'm just watching it, and like anytime she does something and they try to play it off as like, oh, she's not from New York City. It's like, yeah, because people in Boston act like that. It was very strange.
Such radically different cities, New York and Boston.
Well, also, do you think a girl from Boston's gonna let an old woman like stalk her, and the police don't help her, and she's not gonna just like fucking chew her out? This girl, like, rather than like yell at this old woman, like, will go hide in like the kitchen of where she works as a waitress. Do you think that's what a girl from Boston is gonna do if an old woman is stalking her?
No, she's just gonna say you left your bag on the tee and just throw it at her.
Yeah. Exactly. A pretty good impersonation. So then this movie, as it continues to go, it does the thing where the characters have to continually act dumber and dumber in order for the tension to rise. Mm. So this girl ends up remember, there's a reason I keep calling her Hit Girl, right? Remember Hit Girl was like the 8-year-old who could like beat up anybody if you saw Kick-Ass?
Oh, this girl, and Nicolas Cage was her father?
Yes.
Oh, I remember that movie. That was
right. So you see this girl who's taller than this old little Hungarian woman, by the way, right? Ends up going to her house to confront her and somehow ends up locked in a box. It blows my mind. She at one point cuts the woman's finger off and still the woman's able to overpower her and keep her held captive. None of it makes any sense. All you have to do
strength?
I don't know. All she had to do was punch the woman in the face. That's literally all it was. Maybe I'm just a terrible human being, but if an old person is stalking me and I'm legitimately afraid of my life, I'm going to punch them in the face. Okay. They have osteoporosis. Their bones break easier. Just do it.
Justin advocates punching old people. Osteoporosis.
All right. So do see this movie. If you've already seen two other movies that weekend and your girlfriend wants to see this movie, that's the reason to see it. Don't see this movie if there's literally anything else to see. I probably would have been better off. Now, I was seeing it the week before Captain Marvel came out, but I probably would have been better off seeing Captain Marvel, even though I am not going to see that movie. Let's transition into some trailers here. As always, the preview for Trailer Takedown goes up on Saturdays. So if you want to watch the trailers before you listen to the episode, you just go to themidside.com/podcast. You can also alternate. You watch a trailer, we talk about it. You watch a trailer, we talk about it. So let's head into Trailer Takedown now.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
The Act is Hulu's new true crime series, which I assume is a response to the Ryan Murphy series, which did OJ in the first season and is doing Versace in the second season. Or I don't know if the second season is over because I think it's on Netflix, so it may be. But this one is handling the famous story of Gypsy Rose, whose mother it was a documentary about this that I watched, whose mother had such extreme Munchausen syndrome that she had this girl fake diseases her entire life and kept her in captivity, to the point that this girl used the internet to find a guy who she got to kill her mother for her. And now the girl is serving time in prison. The movie stars Patricia Arquette as the mother. It stars Joey King as Gypsy Rose. And this is what I'll say positively. Joey King's performance in this movie, having seen the documentary or in the show, her performance in this show looks tremendous. It looks like she does it 100%. So maybe some Emmy nominations going towards Joey King. I personally would not watch this having already seen the documentary. I'm probably going to end up to, because my girlfriend has already expressed wanting to see it. I don't know why I need to when I've already seen the documentary. So this is a tackle for me.
Tackle.
But Daniel, as I throw it to you, I want to ask the same thing. I sort of led into this with the R. Kelly, Michael Jackson stuff. Are we also going to see this new trend as well of all these true crime series?
I hope so. I like them. But nonetheless, as with everything, just like there's going to be a million Bohemian Rhapsody style movies, it's going to get to a point where we're doing, you know, the story of, you know, my nephew's garage band, or whatever at some point. And same thing with these true crime stories. Now this one isn't that, but we will get to a point where we're doing stories about nothing, because then we'll be out of ideas. But this in particular, I don't think there's been a movie or TV show on this podcast that I thought looked as good that I'm going to tackle. And the reason is that it looks compelling. I don't know if it was just a phenomenal trailer, but the suspense was built up. They framed it in a really interesting way with the opening on the court scene and then the evidence, you know, against her. But I just, this is a look into my psyche at the moment. Literally anything that has to do with children right now has, like, my emotions are heightened by 10,000%. There was a video going around on Facebook of a little girl who was choking at the mall and a police officer saved her life. And it's clear that that happens in the first 1 second of the video. It says the police officer rushed to save her life. I couldn't watch it because I thought I was going to have an emotional breakdown. Like at work, like just scrolling through my Facebook feed, it came up for maybe 2.5 seconds, and I thought I might have to be institutional. So anything having to do with children right now, I just can't even handle. It was hard to get through this trailer, especially knowing it was based on a true story. So this looks great, don't get me wrong, and tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, I watched this and I had the opposite reaction of Daniel. I could not get into it. I know it's based on a true story, but it just seemed too twisted and weird for me to actually connect to. I don't have anything bad to say about the way the trailer was put together or the acting, or even some of the visual compositions looked interesting, and it all looks like it's going to be a great story, but I don't want to watch this. And so I'm not going to.
Tackle. Second trailer.
Dark Phoenix is the latest installment in the quasi weirdly somehow rebooted without telling us they were rebooting it X-Men series. It's the retelling of the Dark Phoenix saga starring Jean Grey. If you remember, they tried to do it in X-Men The Last
Stand.
Actually,
I thought it was starring Sansa Stark.
Starring Sansa Stark, yes, that as well. It's very confusing. I didn't realize she had, the actress Sophie, I don't remember her last name, had gotten such a role, and all of a sudden she's got this huge role. This seems to be her one big role outside of Game of Thrones. If you remember, they tried to do this movie with X-Men The Last Stand, or the third movie in the trilogy of the original X-Men trilogy, but they brought Joss Whedon in and had him do his Cure storyline, and it was very confused with, like, Wolverine being with her instead of Cyclops, and then it was mixed with the Cure storyline, and the cut of that was bad. It was Brett Ratner directing it. This is all, see how this is all like coming together, people?
Yeah.
It's very strange. I remember the Dark Phoenix storyline when I was a kid, the X-Men animated series on Fox. I was very excited for it. It was very enjoyable, but that had to do with the aliens and everything. There seemed to be some space in this trailer. Maybe, William, did you see outer space?
Yeah, there was some planetary explosions. I'll get into that during my part. Yeah.
Yeah, so a little foreshadowing of what William's going to say. But here's the thing. I think I'm just over superhero movies because none of this looks compelling. I was just like, okay, this is happening. It's an X-Men movie. I like the X-Men. Oh, there's the Jennifer Lawrence thing. Although they seem to spoil the fact that Jennifer Lawrence is going to be killed in the beginning, which is probably for the better because Mystique's not supposed to be this big of a role. And then they had Quicksilver, which, you know, in this series, we have to show Quicksilver slowing everything down, blah, blah, blah. So there was nothing compelling, but you know I'm going to see this. So weirdly, the last one, I was like, you know, everything looks good, but I'm going to tackle it. This one, nothing looks great, but I'm going to hug it.
Hug.
Daniel?
What a twist. The X-Men movies, the younger class movies started to be good after the original series started to go very, very, very bad. But even so, I'm fairly well tired of X-Men, especially the new interpretation of it. I will forever, mostly because of the emotional childhood, emotionally welded to the children's cartoon. That's right, just like that. Perfect. So this whole Jean Grey newness, not really interesting to me. The acting looks abysmal, like just shockingly bad. But it looks brilliantly executed, in just like everything does nowadays. The visuals are stunning, and the music is great, and but no, I just can't tackle.
Tackle.
So you would think there's fighting, there's explosions in space. One of my favorite moments at the end of X-Men 2, the original X-Men 2, where you know that the Dark Phoenix storyline is going to take off. I remember that anticipation for the third X-Men and then being disappointed. Same. I cannot.
I remember being in the theater.
Everyone was screaming at the giant movie screen because we knew what was coming and it was so disappointing. My heart, my old heart, it just can't take it anymore. I can't do that again. So I am going to skip it.
Tackle. Final trailer.
Master Z, Yip Man Legacy, is a sequel of a series from China. I did some research on this because I was like, is Yip Man real? Or I was even, how do I say this? Is it like Ip Man? Is it IP Man? I don't even know if I'm saying that right. I mean, this is really Master Z, the Yoshi Man legend, right? I mean, Master Z, Bowser Man legend, Master Z,
For the record, you did say it was Japanese at the beginning, or someone did. Daniel, is that you that said, are they speaking Japanese?
A little wrong. Not that far off, but.
What are those pets again?
Yoshi Yamamoto's?
yummies?
Tamagotchi Man legend. Remember in the Goonies 2 video game on Nintendo where you find him? So this is just a pure martial arts movie. I don't really know the plot. I know it's a spinoff of a series of movies about the man, Yip, it was his last name, if that's pronounced correctly. It's probably not, I apologize. Who trained Bruce Lee.
Yeah. Ah.
So that's where this comes from. This is just pure martial arts. It's mainly subtitled. They're speaking Cantonese. Then at the end of the movie, they speak English because Dave Bautista shows up and starts doing pro wrestling moves. I don't need to see anything else, to be honest with you. Like that scene where she was trying to make him drink and like in the stereotypical Asian martial arts way, they're like, you know, Americans, we would just push it back and forth at each other. Then eventually one of it would get thrown in somebody's face.
Right? Gun would get pulled out. And, yeah.
Yeah. Here, like, the fucking, like, it's just, it's almost like, it's not almost, it's an art form. Like, the beauty of, like, the hand dancing and everything. Like, that was tremendous. I don't care if this is, like, the fifth sequel in the series or whatever. And then you bring in the American brutality of just Dave Bautista just picking the guy up and, like, throwing him against a bar. I'm in. This is a hug.
Hug.
Daniel?
It looked like a video game to me, that scene. Like, you know, you pick the small Asian character who's very quick, and then you pick the big American brutal character who's slow, but he can grab you and, like, throw you through a table. Very Street Fighter-esque, that whole scene. But, Justin, if someone said, make a movie that concretizes the abstraction of stylization, and that's all they told you. They didn't give you specifics, they didn't give you character, they just make a movie that concretizes the abstraction known as stylization. It would be something like this, I think, or this would be a good attempt at it, at least. Because all I could think in this film is it's pure stylization. Pure stylization. As much as it could be, obviously it has to have some sort of substance. It has to have some sort of concrete to it. But every scene, every shot, every movement is a stylized movement, a stylized shot, a stylized color. The scene where he's going through the alleyway and you have all the neon lights that are at different depths. It is style per se.
I'm going to do you one better.
Yeah.
Is it not what Quentin Tarantino was trying to do with Kill Bill Volume 1?
I think it was. I think he has a weird version of it that is strangely naturalistic, but I think it was what he was attempting to do. Yes, totally. But so there's, okay. The reason I'm going to hug this is for that, which on itself is maybe enough to see it, but this is the kind of movie my wife will drag me to. She very rarely drags me to any movies, but this kind of movie, or the American version of this, which would be like John Wick, we will be going to see this movie. It will be a thing that we do, even if we have to bring the baby. Baby loves seeing movies, especially violent movies. So setting that up for his life. So hug.
Hug.
Wait a minute.
There's punching, there's kicking, there's fighting, there's a incredible amount of style, as we've already talked about. I actually really, really want to see this movie now, just on the preview. So there's really nothing more to say other than I'm gonna hug it.
Hug.
Oh, well, William, I think you have a lot more to say, because I think you've got some stories for us in Life on the Midside.
Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. Yeah.
All right.
Usually, hold on. I got to introduce you.
Oh, okay.
Usually, Life on the Midside is about some sort of experience I went through. But William had a much more interesting week. He went on a cruise despite Bill Burr's best objections and advice to the contrary. And he has some experiences to share.
Yeah, so I went on a cruise last week, went to some great places. One of them was we went to St. Kitts and got to hike on a volcano, which I mentioned to you earlier in the show. And this is a pretty intense hike. You know, they kind of give you all the warnings, right? Because, you know, random American cruise goer would not be able to do this hike. My watch tells me it was about 5 miles top to bottom and a good almost 2,000 feet in elevation. And there's really kind of three parts to the climb. Just to give you the overview, like the first part is steep but not terrible. The second part was muddy, so a little more difficult terrain, and then the third part was all scrambling and climbing sort of stuff, right, to get to the top. Now, this has happened to me a lot when I was involved in sports in high school. I'm not the fastest when it comes to just like running or even like hiking. I'm not very quick at that part. Now, climbing, on the other hand, I'm really good at. Like, it's something I don't know why. I'm just really good at. I really enjoy climbing and all the things that come with, like, the scrambling part of hiking. So it's something I really enjoy. Well, as we're going up, they're trying to hurry us because we've only got a limited amount of time before we have to get back to the ship. And so I get into that thing that's happened to me a ton, which is by the time I catch up to the group has taken their break. And as soon as I get there, they're ready to start again. And I'm, of course, monitoring my watch because it's got my heart rate on it. And I'm like, my heart rate's like 155, 160. I need to take my break because I want to make it all the way up this, 2.5 mile hike. I don't want to like gas myself out before I even get to the difficult part. And people trying to be helpful, I think, there were some people encouraging me, which was great, but sort of in a patronizing way. I wasn't going to make it, right? They kept asking me, like, are you going to turn back? And I'm like, no, like, I'm not tired. I just, I just need to let my heart rate come back down so I can keep going. And the funny thing is, when we got to the end of the second section, they had already gone about halfway up the third section. But because I have some skill in climbing, as soon as we got to the part that was more scrambling, like more climbing, very steep sections with bushes and rocks sort of as your holds, I like scrabbled all the way to the top, like really fast for that section. So that's all great. I was just like, okay, I mean, these people were trying to be helpful or whatever. But then the next couple days on the cruise, people kept coming up to me and telling me how great it was that I took on the challenge of the hike. And just the tone was very patronizing. And so my question for Life on the Midside this week is, how do you deal with people? I try to assume people, positive intent here, that they were trying to be encouraging. But how do you deal with something when it comes off so patronizing, when the encouragement comes off so patronizing?
Justin, do you get that with you reached that on that shelf. That's so good for you.
Yeah.
So well done.
Yeah. Really? That's important context because if you, you're pointing that out because if you look at me, I do not look like I am in shape. And let's be honest, I could like to lose a few more pounds, but I'm actually pretty strong. I go to the climbing gym, I work out, I can probably do more pull-ups than you would expect if you just looked at me, like more than zero. So I'm in pretty good shape. So it was like, to me, it was sort of like attacking the fact that I guess they didn't think I was in shape. Right. And it's like, no, I'm in shape. Like I could do this. Like it wasn't a capability thing. It's just, I was just a little slower than everyone else. And, not interested in using what I knew I could do to set my own pace, which I think was another thing that, wasn't like clear. But yeah, this is people definitely judging by looking at me being slow on the first section, which is probably the easiest section, quote unquote, right? Like me pacing myself on the first section only to like overtake everyone in the third section.
Yeah, that's my first instinctive reaction to this is it's how people have confused the aesthetics of bodybuilding with fitness nowadays and judging based upon that. It's just these people come across incredibly ignorant to me because they're doing that. And then there's also a level of virtue signaling here where they think because you're not the visual aesthetic of bodybuilding that you're out of shape. So then they're going to virtue signal by supporting you, by, as you called it off air, fat patronizing you.
It was fat patronizing.
And that's a way to make themselves feel better. I mean, this is tough for me. It doesn't happen with height with me. It happens because I still look like I'm in college, especially with my braces. Like I've had people when I started my job, they asked me for months if I was a student assistant. And I either just don't say anything because I don't want the fight, or I say something that's incredibly nice on its face, but makes them feel incredibly stupid. So it's like I use shame against them where they're trying not to feel shame. So I go right for the
Yeah. I mean, I think overall you have to judge the person's intentions as best you can. Because sometimes it is pure benevolence. It just happens to be stupid benevolence.
And stupid benevolence. We need a t-shirt for that.
That's like, isn't that a Simpsons thing? Stupid benevolence.
Sounds like a Homerism. And then you can politely correct them or whatever you want to do. But sometimes it is someone trying to be woke or someone trying to be social justice-y. The one I get more often now than I have in my entire relationship is when people see Fize and I together, I get a lot of, you know, especially from woke lefties, oh, it must be, you know, difficult in 2019 to be in an interracial relationship. And they're trying to be sympathetic, I guess, but it's really patronizing and it's really, I don't know, dumb. It's dumb benevolence, I guess, stupid benevolence. And in those cases where I don't see it as naivete, but something where they're trying to promote an agenda, I will tell them off in many cases. My most common response is, you know, the hardest thing about being in an interracial relationship is listening to leftists talk about my interracial relationship, which they don't like.
Yeah, I think for me, just to say how I sort of handled it, I was sort of taken aback. It happened like two times in succession, you know, like on the same day, and then it happened a third time the next day. Here's what I wish would have happened. I wish they would have said, wow, you really did that, you know, that third, that tougher section, you did that better than anyone else, right? Like that, recognizing the, you know, like, hey, I used my skills. I knew I could do this. And when we got to the part where my skills were the best, I performed the best. But to, in the moment, all I could do is really just smile and say, well, thank you. I really enjoyed the hike, especially the climbing parts, right? Especially the scrambles. And that's what I said the second and third time. But like the first time I was just sort of like, so like taken aback and like surprised. I was like, well, thanks, you know, like sort of with the, I think like implied there. So I don't know that I really handled it the best, but yeah, I don't want to, like you guys are saying, I don't want to turn it. I want to assume it's benevolent. And if it's benevolent, I don't want to turn it into something, a negative interaction for them. Right. But it is sort of like, hey, do you know what you're saying here? Are you really recognizing something that I did, or are you trying to make yourself feel better?
But that's something that's lost in our society nowadays. Is it used to be, even if you were being benevolent, if you made a stupid mistake, you were validly made to feel shame for it. And so you would go back and you would reassess, why did I get that response? But the problem is because now everybody responds in the way that they're right, even if they're completely wrong. When you get that negative pushback now, you don't take that as a statement on you did something wrong. You take it as a statement that there's something wrong with them, so I'm just going to continue to act the way I am. We've lost that tool of social interaction. Social shaming no longer works.
Yeah, there is something sort of impolite about it's sort of like, you know, a lot of times we've talked about like, you know, we've laughed at the fat shaming, right? But this sort of like anti-fat shaming is also just as weird and patronizing, sort of like, sort of almost like trying to get in my business in a way, right? It's sort of like, why should I sit there and explain to you that, well, actually I'm pretty, you know, pretty strong and I strength train and, you know, like I climb all the time. Like this was not the part that you're like saying was such an accomplishment is just me being a good hiker and setting my pace so that I could make it all the way to the top.
Well, William, let me ask you then, because this is actually similar to a problem I have is similar to a problem that Daniel says, where Daniel will not acknowledge children now because he doesn't want to be seen negatively for it. I have the same thing. Like every once in a while in the gym, like an obese person or like a really fat person will go in there and I'll see them working hard. And I know they probably had to work really hard to psych themselves up to go to the gym. And I want to be supportive. Like my instinct is to be supportive and be like, good job. Keep working hard. It'll pay off. And that'll be it. Like, I don't want to sit there and have like a full conversation with them, but just to give them that little bit of a support. So it becomes a benevolent environment. But exactly what you just said, because of today's society, I'm afraid that if I do that, it'll actually make things a negative environment on accident.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would be better to like point out, pointing out hard work is good. I think there's a way to do that and it be positive. I think also pointing out technique, you know, there's a lot of, let's be honest, there's a lot of bad technique, in lifting weights in the gym. So if you see someone, who's putting in the effort and they might be a little overweight and you're like, man, I really like your deadlift technique. You know, like, where'd you learn that or whatever? You know, that's a way to be supportive and not be patronizing. At least that's how I would take it.
Well, then there's the other problem too. People who think they're in shape and have terrible technique that I want to tell them, but then I don't say anything because I don't want them to get mad at me.
Yeah.
Like there's one guy who, when he's doing bicep curls, he like dips down his shoulder. Oh, sorry. I just did it. That's why I moved away from the mic. He dips down his shoulder and
it's an
back.
Audio show.
I know, but okay. I'm doing it. He dips down his shoulder and back, so he's not really lifting his biceps, and I want to tell him, but I can just tell by the look in his face that if I talk to him, he'd get so angry at me.
So he's from Boston, too?
No.
I've solved this problem by never talking to anyone.
Oh, see, I attempt that, but then I actually like to talk to people, so that didn't work for me.
See, introvert.
Yeah.
Oh, 2019.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's a good natural ending point for this episode. So let's put a bow on this. What did we learn this trip? William? Daniel? Who usually goes first?
You have me first, so I'm taking it, man, okay. on the outline.
All right.
I learned that fat shaming and fat patronizing are just two sides of the same coin, and it's a false dichotomy, bro. That's our first.
It's one thick coin.
Yeah.
Daniel?
This is where you say my name. There you go. Okay. How long have we done the show? I learned that he's proposing a business new deal, which is the equivalent of what's-her-face's wickedly immoral Green New Deal, which is simply a moving in the Overton window, and we should all reject Elizabeth Warren, and we should reject Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and we should vote for no one. Justin?
I learned that Michael Jackson story was apparently more detailed than I anticipated it being. And there's not just one thing I learned in that segment. That was a very long, in-depth discussion that I did not anticipate. So good job, gentlemen. Nice technique.
Thank you for talking to me, Justin.
Thanks for fat patronizing us.
If you listeners out there enjoyed that first story or any of the show or opposite, if you disagreed with something we said, which is more often the case, as we learned with the backing and the parking space story from a couple episodes ago, who knew that the most controversial take that we at the Midside would have is to not back into parking spots? That caused more controversy online than anything we've ever said.
And we're not done. Awesome. I'm doing a solo only episode where I will go back into this topic.
Are you going to take calls?
Oh, so please join our Patreon to support the backup episode. Backing up into park. Back that truck up.
That's right. So if you agree, disagree, whatever, we're on social media everywhere at the Midside. You can tell us what you like.
Oh, they know how to find us, Daniel. They know how to find us, believe me.
That's at the Midside on Facebook, Twitter, etc. You can go to themidside.com/podcast to go listen to that episode where Justin takes the very highly controversial stance that one should not back into one's parking spot. I agree with him. And you can listen to all the shows. They're all past six seasons there's a ton of other content, including Nolan Notes and the Snyder series and lots of stuff there, including the store. So themidside.com/store, where you can get your False Dichotomy Bro shirt or the logo or Hail Snydra. You can also subscribe to this show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, any number of places, and get it delivered directly to you the moment it is published on Midside Mondays. Leave us a 5-star rating while you're there. That helps out a lot. We love our 5-star ratings. Sincerely appreciate that. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. Libertarians are, we like them. They're good.
I don't know. Some of them back into their parking spots.
No, never mind then. That's all good. Patreon.com/themidside is where you can go to give us a few bucks every time we produce a piece of content for you. It's very helpful. Helps me buy a microphone. A microphone! And helps us keep the lights on as well as the hosting and things like that. There's also Patreon exclusive content sometimes. probably soon. I don't know.
We got busy.
We got busy. That's right. But aside from all that, sweep all that aside. Clear your mind for a moment. Come with me on this journey where you, the listener.
Come with me into a world of pure imagination.
That's right. Where you can use your imagination and your creativity to tell a friend about the show. because your friends who don't know about the show need to be told about it by you. Don't wait for some of your other friends to tell them. No, no. You yourself should tell your friends about the show so that we can grow the midside, so we can bring more people in to witness the farce and into this movement of looking at reality on reality's terms and not wanting to do social justice, but actual justice, not wanting to do collectivism, but individualism, not wanting to do naturalism, but romanticism. Yes, bring them in, bring your friends into the circle of trust here on the midside, and help us grow this thing. So until next time, we love you lots.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Back in and have a day.
Out of curiosity, did anyone hear River completely like yak up a bunch of crap during the show?
No, it did not make it, thankfully. But if you want to get a better mic, just so you could get that environmental noise.
Because her name is River, does she have the same rights as a human?
She thinks she does.
No, I didn't hear it, thank God. I would have thrown up a little bit in my mouth. You know what the greatest thing is about having a microphone, Justin? Is that I can actually
get up close to it like this and do an NPR voice. It's very nice.
Sweaty balls.
I appreciate it. That's right, here on the midside.